today on Rocking the Suburbs.
You know, living in a world where nothing boring ever happens can be a real piss-up.
Okay, we're going to continue our Young Ones episodes here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan, speaking on behalf of my good friend, co-host, and co-founder, Patrick Foster, who is not on the episode today. For the Young Ones episodes, we have Will Pfeiffer and Stephen Routledge. Hello, gents.
Hello.
Hello. Good to be back. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Yeah. And as I mentioned before, this every Friday for a series of six Fridays, we're talking about one episode each of The Young Ones. And before we get started here, guys, I just want to mention that the excitement about these episodes, as we're recording this, before any of them have been posted, the excitement is palpable, I will tell you. Because I've mentioned, just in passing, to some members of the community that we were doing this, and I'm getting bugged constantly. When are those episodes going to be ready? When are they going to be ready? When are they going to be up? So as we're recording this now, none of them have posted yet, but people are hounding me. They're picketing outside my house right now. When demonstrating, when will the Young Ones episodes be posted?
Now, when you say the community, you just mean your local community, suburban community, not the music community, just people in your neighborhood, passersby.
Passersby, yes.
City
yes.
councilmen, that sort of a thing.
I suppose, yes.
Local merchants.
I suppose that's true. Okay, so Young Ones, episode 3, Boring. And let's just get right into it here.
Once in every lifetime comes a love like this. Oh, I need you, you need me. Oh, my darling, can't you see? Young ones, darling, we're the young ones. We're young ones.
Shouldn't be afraid
to live, love. There's a song to be sung. Cause we may not be the young ones very long.
So, the episode opens with the flat is very quiet, and we guess it's morning, and the roommates are still asleep. Now, actually, before we get into this, actually, one thing we didn't discuss before about the differences between American and British English in the previous episodes, I just automatically refer to their residence as a flat, because that's how it's referred to, I think, in the show. And that's how I know is the British term for what we would call an apartment, right, Will?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We never really discussed this because we don't say flat over here. Nobody says
no.
That. Right. So flat is, I guess, just because an apartment generally would be on a single floor. Is that why it's a flat?
No. I don't know. I don't know the original origin of why it's called a flat, but if you called it an apartment, you would expect something quite flash.
Oh.
So a flat would generally, yeah, if you had more than two bedrooms in a flat, that would be probably then become an apartment because it would be too big and fancy to be a flat. So flats tend to be smaller, like normally one bedroom or two bedrooms. An estate agent might call something an apartment, but most people would call it a flat unless it was like it'd be got to be quite grand to be called. You might have an apartment on a holiday when you go to Spain on holiday. That might be an apartment rather than a flat. But but it would generally be smaller. And even though that's a house, it's been basically they're not really in a flat because it's just a house with a bit different. They're all in different rooms. They're sharing the thing. It's just also a student digs would probably be like a flat. I mean, sorry, when I say student digs, does that even mean anything to you at all?
Like a student apartment or a dorm?
Yeah, so
or
digs being accommodation.
Yeah.
So normally students would be staying in student flat as well. So,
Okay. Now, this is all new to me. I didn't know there was a flat and an apartment.
I think we've got more to come on potential language things that you may not have noticed.
Yes, in fact, the way... If that house they were living in was in, say, DC, that would be a row house. That's what you would call that.
Right, there. Right.
Or a townhouse, I guess would be another term. Right.
And there are, in college, like, we lived in a house that was kind of like that. And crappy like that, too. But, you know, it was just, yeah. It was, we rented a house, and so.
Right, right. Okay. Okay, so anyway, we're in the flat. And it's quiet. And an old man sort of trots in, and the soldier, which appears to be from like a recruitment poster or something like that on the wall, is right. is alive and sitting in a chair, and Stephen wants to address
but
this.
But in the same pose, right?
Isn't yes. he? Like, yes. He's,
yes.
Yeah, that is a very, very famous recruitment poster from the First World War. So the guy on the poster is someone called Lord Kitchener, mm-hmm. and that poster basically went up with like, your country needs you to basically, yeah, when they were trying to recruit soldiers before the draft, getting yep. to volunteer to fight in the First World War. So very, very, very familiar. And it's been used multiple times for other things because it's such a kind of an iconic kind of an image.
So people in the UK would automatically understand yes, that's from
everyone
the
would
poster.
Know that. Everyone would know that's supposed to be Lord Kitchener.
To make the connection
yeah, yeah.
that that's what
and
it was.
We,
go ahead.
Yeah, and we have similar, and also from the First World War, Uncle Sam saying, I want you. And it's like a yes, very right. famous
yeah.
image.
It's,
and,
yeah, it's yeah. the exact same equivalent mm-hmm. of that. Yeah.
Yes, got
and
it.
He's pointing, I mean, it's like practically the same pose and everything. So.
Got it. Okay. Well, anyway, in this moment, he's outside of the poster. He's come alive in some way, sitting there in three dimensions. We see mice playing cards.
Yes.
We know they're mice because one calls one of them a rat, and he's corrects him that no, he's a mouse. And then there's a carrot and some other piece of food. If you guys can
is
help me what that
stick
what
of
that
butter
was.
Maybe or
might have been a chip possibly
a chip yeah or, like a fr- oh, yeah fr- right. fr- yeah
that might have been what it was. I was wondering too, was it a stick of butter, was it other some other vegetable? I couldn't really tell what it was, but they're ice skating, they're doing like a ice skating yeah. dance on a plate.
It took an insane amount of work to put all that together. It's like the effort that went into that opening.
Which, and for something that has kind of like no relevance to, yeah, to almost exactly. anything, really.
Like if they had left it out, no one would have missed it, certainly.
True.
So, yeah, they could go the extra mile.
I will say on this one, you know, yes, as we mentioned in previous episodes, this is all done, you know, with puppetry, right? These are all like practical effects at this yeah. point in time, right? I will say, though, that this one has a good, pretty good payoff later yeah. on. Right. It does come back around. So we know it's morning because we hear the rooster crowing and we see Neil has been awake and he's sitting in his window. And then using what is obviously not a practical effect, the sun cracks in two.
Yes.
And Neil says,
morning has broken.
Ba-dum-bump.
Yes. All right. Then I noticed that Neil, in general, he a lot of his jokes are sort of like little puns or takes on like expressions, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Then we see Mike and Vivian. They're at the breakfast table. They're eating cereal. Vivian is talking about entering some competition to win a Ford Tippex, which I don't know what a Ford Tippex is.
Is it a
car? I mean, other than I know it's a car made by Ford.
That's actually a joke.
Okay.
So, the car, you don't know what Tippex is at all, no?
No.
Mm-mm. Right. Okay. So Tippex is like a white fluid that you would use when I was at school to paste that when you've made a mistake in pen and
oh,
you
okay.
could write
like,
over it.
Like whiteout, we would call it, liquid paper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's Tippex. And so the car that they show is actually a Ford Granada and they just put the Tippex on it. Probably to get around the fact that it's the BBC and they can't have, although they've got cornflakes, so I don't know. But anyway, it's just, yeah, there's no such thing as a Ford Tippex, basically.
Oh, got it.
It's a Ford Granada, which is kind of the largest model of Ford you could buy in the UK at the time. So okay. they've got the top of the range Ford. Yeah.
So that's a funny joke because they've covered up the name.
Yeah, that's a good joke.
Ah. Oh, that's great. Okay, so I got to refer to my my web browser here. I did save a page for what's coming up. All right, here we go. So the contest that Vivian is entering, there's two parts to this contest.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the second part first, which is that he has to explain in 10 words why he loves cornflakes, and he just writes,
cornflakes, cornflakes, Cornflakes! Pathetic! You never win, Vivian.
Why not?
There's only 9 words. Cornflakes! Anyway, you'll still never win because nothing interesting ever happens to us.
Stop being so boring, Rick.
Of course, Rick corrects him.
Right. So that's, yes. But the first part, he says you have to match up 6 pictures of famous noses with 6 pictures of famous bogeys.
Bogeys.
Okay.
I was going to bring this up.
Okay. Well, can I, before you do that, I went and looked up the term bogey. I mean, I had a sense of what it might mean.
That's what I was going to bring up. So,
right.
Yeah.
But I went to the Cambridge Dictionary here online. Mm. And here are your choices.
Well, there's multiple meanings.
So a bogey could be, in golf, the act of getting a ball into the hole in one shot more than par for that hole. I don't think that's what he's referring to.
That's the golf term. Yeah, that's the American golf term or all-over golf term.
It could mean something that causes fear among a lot of people, often without reason, such as the bogey of unemployment. I was not familiar with that.
Is that like the bogeyman kind of?
Yes, correct.
Say
bogeyman, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay, and we don't think that's it. And then the third definition here is, and this is in the Cambridge Dictionary, a piece of dried mucus from inside the nose. So there
like
you go.
Like a booger.
Ding, ding, ding. Yes, there we go.
Yes, that's.
Use the context, my contextual clues, I assumed it was a booger, but I've never heard that term other than this show, really.
A bogey could also refer to a part of a railway carriage, trains or carriages, like wheel set, like when you're it's a part of the construction. The bogey is part of that as well. But yeah, obviously in this instance, yeah, it's like, what's coming out of somebody's nose.
Right.
Delightful.
Now, what kind of contest is this? Did Kellogg sign off on this contest? I don't.
Because it is Kellogg's Cornflakes.
I think they even show the brand name on the box. Yeah.
Which I found surprising because for a long time, it was a joke about the BBC that, they would always cover up the brands and stuff because there's no advertising on the BBC. Or if they mention a brand, they would say other brands are available.
Really?
You know, kind of like as a disclaimer because there's rules about advertising on the BBC, you see.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, the fact that it kind of blatantly is like a mass... Yeah, the, yeah it's kind of odd, certainly for the time especially.
That's fascinating.
Well, you wouldn't see generally... There's some exceptions, but generally in an American TV, like American sitcoms, they would take pains to either cover up brand names or create something fake because, because
they don't want free advertising.
Right, they don't want free advertising when they're charging people for advertising.
I've noticed in my multiple rewatches of Seinfeld, there are times when they'll have like a Coca-Cola sign and it's like the Coke half is just painted over. You can still tell instantly what it is, but it's like it's just that. And they used to have like generic beer cans they would always use. It was just like a red can. It looked vaguely like a beer can, but there was obviously no label. Now I think they just, somebody ponies up dough and then they're happy to use
it. I've tried that beer. It's not very good. Avoid that beer.
Yeah. It's not good.
No. Okay, and then here we go. Now we get into the heart of this episode. Rick declares that nothing interesting ever happens to them, right? So, hence, boring.
Boring.
Which is the theme of this episode, but, of course, that's a big joke because there's a lot of interesting things that happen.
Tons.
Right, of course.
And they don't notice any of it.
So, as I mentioned, Rick says nothing interesting happens to us. Neil also expresses that he's bored. They decide to kill the boredom that they will play Monopoly.
Oh, the irony.
Exactly. Right. Even globally acknowledged as a boring game.
That's right. Okay, now I want to get into this here. I noticed in this episode that Vivian is wearing a Rush t-shirt. Did you guys
notice that?
Yeah, that was one of the first things I noticed, when I was taking my own notes,
Is it the 2112?
Yeah.
Cover?
It's the guy on the... That's Rush is the first concert I ever saw.
That's
but
great.
Not 2112. I was fears you too young for that.
That's great. So this led me to wonder, have I missed other Vivian t-shirts in the other episodes? Was I just not paying attention or what? Was he wearing band t-shirts in other episodes?
I don't know.
And I went back and looked, and my answer is, I don't know. Because he's wearing a black t-shirt in the first two episodes, and there is some design on it, but I can't make out what it is. And I'm not sure if it is something or if it's just sort of a generic rock and roll sort of look, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know. If you guys have a chance to go back to one and two and can figure that out for me, I can't tell. But in this one, you can clearly tell it's Rush. Okay, now here we go. This makes Monopoly more interesting, Will. Vivian draws a Monopoly yeah. card, like a community chest or whatever, and there are new instructions on it to smash Rick over the head with the bank, which he does.
Right? He does immediately.
Yes.
And by the way, I think we need to give credit because those hits look real. I mean, he really looks like he smacks someone.
I think so, yes.
And Rick Mayall, he just takes it.
Yes, yes. You know, Rick is all upset about this. It turns out if you look through the cards, they all have some instruction to do something awful to Rick.
But we have to change the rules because Monopoly is so boring.
Congratulations. It is your birthday. You may set fire to Rick's bed.
Good night.
Get out of jail free. You may keep this card, sell it, or stick it up Rick's bottom.
Vivian, you've ruined the game. I was bored.
Now, Neil is in the garden and he says he's going to kill himself and he's digging a grave and he holds up his shovel and says,
"You're a spade." I always call him that.
So again, that's sort of Neil jokes. Now, two things on language here. First off, let's start with the spade. Now, Will, when you think of a spade, do you think of a big shovel like that you would use to dig a big hole? Or do you think, like I do, of the small... like a trowel kind of.
No, I don't know. I mean, first one? I think of a suit in cards, I suppose. But I think of sort of generically any shovel. And again, okay. A sad confession is I've used this joke like 10,000 times when my wife and I are doing yard work. I'll be like, "That's a spade," and then she rolls her eyes and walks away.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong then. I always thought a spade was the small little one hand, you know, little.
You may be
tool,
right, though.
And that a shovel was a shovel, right? But, perhaps I'm incorrect on that. Now, my other question is garden. Garden doesn't mean the same thing in Britain as it does over here, right? What is a garden?
Well, it's your outside area, normally with grass or flower beds and plants and stuff in it. I think you quite often call that your yard, possibly.
Yes.
Right. Right.
Whereas, it doesn't have to be, it can just be grass, you know, and that can be a garden. Yeah, or it can be just a driveway and you still call it the front garden if you don't have any grass or plants or stuff.
Oh, really?
But yeah.
Yeah, ours is a yard, and then the garden would be like where we grow vegetables or possibly flowers.
Flowers.
But mostly like vegetables.
Yes, well, if you're growing vegetables, that's a very specific thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Where you grow your vegetables, that would be your vegetable patch, your vegetable plot or something like that. It's definitely a garden, even if it is technically a yard. Most people would probably still refer to it as a garden. You
know? So that would be the backyard, is what I would say in this case. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
Right, right.
Now, here's another thing. Neil says, the most interesting thing that ever happens to him is sneezing. And then he says, "I wish I was Magnus Magnuson."
I immediately highlighted this in the episode. I think you're probably going to ask me what's going on.
It sounds impressive, right? It's an impressive name, but I don't know who that is.
So Magnus Magnuson was the original host for 25 years of what is considered in Britain the sort of pinnacle of quiz shows, a show called Mastermind, which has been started in 1972. It is the opposite of most TV game shows. There's no glitz, glamour, or indeed really prizes. It's just a black leather chair in the spotlight, contestant. They have 2 minutes on general knowledge and they have 2 minutes on their specialist subject. So they've notified the quiz in advance. And it is very difficult. So I'm relatively good at pub quizzes. If I could get half of the general knowledge questions, I think I'd done really, really well on Mastermind. And so he was the host of that, and it. So that's that. What so the joke is that he would hear lots of interesting things throughout his life,
oh,
in his
day to
day life, because he's the quiz master of Mastermind, which is all these fascinating subjects that come up. And it spawned a catchphrase because there's a, if the you have 2 minutes to get as many in as answers in as possible, so people, if they don't know, they won't stop and think about it, they'll say pass anyway. When he gets when the buzzer goes, the host will say, and this is continued after the host changed, I've started, so I'll finish. So he'll then finish the question and they have time to answer that last mm-hmm. question, and that is a sort of well-known sort of catchphrase in the UK. I've started, so I'll finish. So
nice.
And so that's your potted history of
nice.
Mastermind well, and Magnus.
It's Magnus. Such a great name that I really thought I was, I didn't know of some grand historical figure or something like that. Like
yeah.
it sounds like some conqueror or something, doesn't it?
No, his daughter is actually a newsreader as well in BBC Scotland. So, but I think they were from up Orkney way, hence the sort of Scandinavian
right.
name.
Right.
So,
right.
I remember years ago when I used to watch this. The Strongest Man in the World competitions on ESPN, there was a guy named Magnus Vermagnussen, and he was like one of those big guys that would lift a concrete ball or something. But I figured it couldn't be him.
No, definitely not him. Most definitely a different person. But to give you an idea of the sort of intensity of the quiz show, the guy who created it allegedly drew on his experiences of being interrogated by the Gestapo in the Second World War when he created so it. Is,
wow.
So this is not kind of like, you know,
what a friendly little
I mean, it's not nasty, not yeah, you know, but it's intense.
Yeah,
it's deliberately intense and designed to be so. But anyway, there you go. So
wow, that's so interesting. Okay,
that's fascinating.
Mike pops out, but Neil tells Mike he does not think he will kill himself today, but just in case, he's digging the grave. Okay. Then we go, because of the digging, we go to a scene that shows what's under the ground where he's digging, and it's a world where nothing boring ever happens. There's a king and a queen on thrones. They look like the type you would see on playing cards, right? Mm-hmm. And the king and the queen, they're both sort of complaining that their world is too interesting. There's a good musical reference here. There's a minion who announces that a time machine has returned with video of the birth of Christ, and next door, the Rolling Stones are recording a new album with yes. with two hippopotamuses making love under the piano.
Yes.
Now, I will say, in 1982, the mere fact that the Rolling Stones were recording a new album in the next room may not have been the most interesting thing
yeah.
at that particular time. But nevertheless, the other parts definitely make it very yes. interesting, right?
I don't know if it's only me, but I saw that scene. It made me think Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
Okay, Neil goes back in the house. There's a knock at the door. Nobody wants to answer it. And we really get a sense of the house dynamics here, the way it goes round and round. Who's going to answer the door? You get a sense of who's more powerful than whom, right?
I like that Rick just breaks down. He just can't take how boring Neil is about answering the door.
Yes.
He just cannot handle it.
That's right.
Hey, guys, great idea. Listen, why don't we, right, decide who's going to answer the door, right? And then that person could, like, go and answer it, right? And then find out who it is and who they want to see, right? And then, like, come back in here and tell whoever it is that there's somebody who wants to see them, yeah?
Neil, do
what?
Me a favour.
What?
Die.
So I suppose I'll just have to go and answer it myself, as usual.
That's right. Finally, the door is broken down by the person. It's Billy Belofsky, the brother of Jerzy. This particular Belofsky is quite insane.
Yes. Even compared to the others.
Yes. He just sort of yammers on about a bunch of things. He says that he has a message for them. He sort of, you know, teases them with the message. He says he's thirsty. He drinks a fishbowl, including a goldfish. Then we see inside Billy's stomach, which I guess that's the goldfish.
It doesn't look like a goldfish.
It looks quite awful. No.
Yeah. I think this is the most disgusting interlude so far. I had notes. Of all their little interludes, this is the most disgusting. thus far, not ever.
Absolutely. Is the other thing a potato? Is that what that's supposed to be? You think so? Okay.
Yeah, and he keeps talking about how he's like, a stunt goldfish? Like,
yes.
He's not in any danger.
So the immediate joke is that, yes, that the goldfish was not harmed.
It's clearly fake. It could not look less like an actual fish.
Right, right. So anyway, we move on. We go back to the room. Billy's talking to a cactus. He pulls it out of the pot. He's sort of playing with it. Guess what I am?
See, this joke I got because when my brother and I were kids, we watched Doctor Who on PBS, and he's doing a Dalek, which were the robots that Doctor Who fought. They were like these, they look kind of like R2-D2, but even sort of simpler, and then they had these, like, guns that came out of them, like laser guns, I guess, and they would say, exterminate, exterminate. I mean, I'm sure Steven's got to be very familiar with this, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Daleks and Doctor Who. Yeah, that's it's just a sort of integral part of just growing up. Really. Yeah.
And they showed it on PBS here in America, so we watched it like Saturday nights or something. But
I've never seen an episode of Doctor Who.
All right.
Now it's like, and I know huge there's about, and very.
There's like 2,000 or more episodes or something, right?
It started in the. Did it even start in the 50s, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
It's
crazy.
It's been going ridiculously long time, yeah.
All right. I did not catch it. That's good. I just thought he was just doing more insane things.
And he is, sort of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Rick steals the message. He hands it to Mike. Then we get the Alexei Sale monologue that he likes to do, where he just sort of breaks character and just sort of talks, right? And he's talking about the noise coming from neighbors in the building where he lives.
I've not always been mad, you know, but I was actually driven mad by the indifference of architects and council planners. You see, I live in a tower block, and the thing about those is there's a terrible noise problem because there's no noise insulation at all. You know, and 8 floors below you, there's always some bastard who's got a Yamaha home organ, you know. You're just about to go to sleep and you hear this. And like, the people who live upstairs from me, I can't understand what they're doing. You know, I listen, and all I can hear is this weird noise, and it goes vroom, vroom, blam, blam, vroom, vroom, blam, blam. It sounds right. It sounds like two elephants on a motorbike riding round and round while a seal bangs a kipper on the table. I went upstairs to complain, and the door was answered by this elephant in a crash helmet. Standing behind him is this seal going, what is it now, I don't know, it's just something cracked inside, you know, and I started thinking I was a piece of sponge, yeah, and I just started getting very depressed. And I just
when I saw this the first time, I had no idea what a tower block was. I didn't know the term. And then later, I saw the movie Attack the Block, which takes place in a tower block. And so then I learned.
But is it just a block that has high-rise apartment
buildings?
Is it
like public housing, kind of, or lower-class housing, like?
Yeah, so, yeah, it's not. It's definitely no apartments in a tower block. They're definitely flats.
Okay.
Most tower blocks would be like social housing, like council housing and the like. So, you might, your projects, I think, housing projects type thing. It's,
okay.
Be similar to, and a lot of them were notoriously horrendously designed and not very nice to live in.
Cabrini Green in Chicago, which is
got it. But, okay. Yeah. I just got the sense that this was probably a bit that Alexei Sale would just do, you know, as a stand-up, right? So it's actually quite funny. Okay, then it turns out the note says, dear boys, don't let Billy near the goldfish bowl. Yes, right. Okay, now this is another crazy interlude. Rick is so bored, he's yawning. The camera zooms in on his mouth. We hear,
I am the god of hell!
Which is from Fire by the Crazy World of Arthur Brown.
Right.
Then we see a scene in hell where these two demons are torturing a man. They're doing various things like teasing him with a, they call it a cake. It looks like a pie to me. I don't know if that's another terminology thing I don't quite get. But and then they smash it in his face, and then they clean off his face with Brillo pads. And then they make him listen to Barry Manilow.
And the little person demon is David Rappaport from Time Bandits and a bunch of other stuff. Like, he's done a lot of stuff.
Oh, wow.
He's like the lead person in Time Bandits. So, I'm like, who is that guy? I know I've seen him before.
They then have the scene where they're just sort of talking shop and about how difficult it is to collect souls, and the one demon that you mentioned, Will, says he has particular trouble because I guess in order to be summoned to the earthly plane, someone has to say your name, and no one ever says his name, which is Fatumsh.
Fatumsh.
Okay, now we go
back. And you can see the joke being set up now.
Yes, of course, of course. Okay, we go back to the flat. There's the roommates are watching TV. There's no room on the sofa for Rick. He would have to sit on the rickety chair, which I think, Will, we used to make this reference.
I think we did, actually.
When you and I were younger and living in Rockford, about the rickety chair.
We made our friend Mark Johnson sit on the rickety chair.
Yes, I think you're right. I like that. And it's really truly awful. This awful little chair that's like, you know, broken and stuff. First off, they're watching a show called Bastard Squad, which I'm assuming is a made up program.
Yes,
okay. But it sounds great, doesn't it?
It does.
Rick figures the way he'll get on the sofa is if he changes the channel, that'll force someone else to get up and change the channel back. And then he'll get on the sofa. That does work, except that Vivian then just pushes him off and, you know, there's always the violence. But I want to ask, when he changes the channel, we're watching some show with a comedy of errors, I guess, sort of set up here. Yes, but do you have any insight into what this is or what this is supposed to be?
I believe it's just a spoof of sort of the comedy type stuff that might have been around in the 70s. In sort of the domestic setting and the sort of farce and the sort of trousers down, that sort of stuff, not very, actually very funny comedies, you know.
Right.
It's just a spoof version of that. Yeah, there's enough elements in it that you could recognize other things from it, you know.
Right.
But
the situation that the character finds himself in.
Right, yeah, it's like
unpleasant.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Decidedly so.
Yes. And then a news flash comes on the TV about a siege, which of course would be very interesting. It turns out it's happening right outside the building. And then it comes.
And then later inside,
right behind them. They don't notice any of this. They refer to the person as a terrorist. There's a missile. There's a very, very small tank. Yes. Comically small tank. There's an explosion. There's all sorts of things that are happening, and they don't notice at all. Now, they do see Viv's car on the TV. They see his car, although he says it's not his car, but obviously it is his car. They're just not understanding that this is happening around them. But it is referred as a Ford Anglia?
Anglia, yeah. Ford Anglia, that's right. Yeah,
Anglia.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Same as the Harry Potter car.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There's sort of an older model car.
Yes,
right?
that'd be from the 60s, the Ford Anglia.
Yeah, yeah. Because so. Then he has flames on the side of it, too. It looks very, very hot rodish kind of thing. Yeah.
The flames.
Yes. Neil says they should eat. He goes to make lentils. Then there's an explosion in the kitchen. This came from a grenade from the incident that was happening right behind them that was tossed into the pot. The others get upset. They want money from Neil for the tea that was lost. And then here's the payoff from earlier. Neil, in sort of cleaning up a bit, presses a plate down on that chip or whatever we saw earlier. Chip meaning fry in American vernacular. It squashes it. And then you see the puppetry again, and the food says,
"Darling carrot, could you ever love a cripple?"
"No, I don't think so."
Yeah, I know. I think that's quite funny. So I think it's worth all the effort they went to earlier.
Okay. And part of what's funny is how much effort they went to.
Right, right. Okay, now they decide in order to eat, they will need to go to the pub. And here we have a musical performance, but hold off. We'll get to that at the end here of who that musical guest is. There's a band playing in the pub. They mention the pub they're going to is Doner Kebab, I think is what they say, which is funny because I knew, like, when I went to Germany, that was a popular thing, Doner and, like, Doner Kebab, like, that kind of stuff. So I guess I didn't realize it was also popular in the UK.
Because it's obviously Turkish origin. Yes. Obviously, you've got a big Turkish community in Germany. And a doner kebab is something you'd normally have late at night, normally after the pub.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that it was of questionable origin was not matter because you're already a good few pints in, so you're not really going to notice. Extremely unhealthy. I mean, actually quite tasty, but extremely unhealthy. Probably best not to think about it too much.
Right. Now, I noticed the sign on the pubs, the name of it is the Kebab and Calculator.
Yeah, bizarre.
Very bizarre, right? But it looks like it's a real place. It looks like it's shot on a location. They didn't make this up, but this looks like it actually exists.
No, I think the sign was just added.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Now, again, we're not going to say who the band was right now, but when they enter, Rick does ask the band if they know Summer Holiday by Cliff Richard.
Of course he does.
So, again, he likes Cliff Richard, but the response to him was, if you hum it, I'll smash your face in.
Exactly. This is from the band itself.
Yes. Yes. They sit at a table. Viv goes to the bar to get them drinks, and Neil wants crisps. In the U.S. are you would call chips, right?
Okay. Right. Like a bag of chips.
Yes. Now, Viv orders for himself something called Baby Sham. What is that?
Well, there's a couple of things I've noted here. Yeah, Baby Sham, I immediately highlighted, wondered if that would translate. But also, Rick also makes a comment about a waiter.
Well, just as I expected, totally boring.
Yes, the service is terrible too. Waiter! Waiter!
And of course, in a pub like that, you don't get waiters in a pub like that.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of like him showing he's completely out of his, he doesn't really know what he's not, because no one would go into a pub like that and expect one to get a waiter or two, call out for one without expecting to get probably punched. So, so that's kind of a joke in itself. But yeah, Baby Sham is kind of, I don't know if Stephen will still get it now. It came in very small bottles, and it was it's a carbonated alcoholic drink. I think it was Perry, possibly. Very soft, very, very sugary. Almost like now it'd be like an alcohol pop or something would be the equivalent of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't marketed like that. It was like the sort of thing that your grandma would have.
Okay.
Because it was very easy to drink, sort of sweet tooth and that sort of thing. But the whole, and the reason why it's funny that Viv is ordering it is because they had this whole advertising campaign would be having, rather than like your grandma ordering it, some big birdie nightclub bouncer going, I'll have a Baby Sham. And that would be kind of, so the fact that Viv, who's a psycho, is asking for a Baby Sham kind of is a play on that advert.
Mm-hmm.
As a joke kind of thing, he would fit the character of inappropriate people to ask for a Baby Sham, you know.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. When I heard Baby Sham, I literally thought, like, is the joke that he is drinking shampoo?
Oh.
Right? Because
I think Baby Sham comes from baby champagne.
That's what thought. Okay. It was some kind of weak champagne for children something.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I think that's the very first thing that had alcohol in it that I ever drunk in my life at one of my grandparents was Baby Sham. Because it's the sort of thing that a child could tolerate drinking.
So, of course, the joke that a super tough, violent person like Vivian would drink this is the joke. Okay, yes, makes sense. Now, it turns out, of course, that the bartender is Vivian's mother.
Okay, I want a pint of water in a straight glass, a bag of roast ox crisps, and mine's a Baby Sham.
Hello, Vivian.
Oh, hello, Mum.
Yes.
And he's very sort of nonchalant about it. Hello, Mom.
Oh, hello. He didn't know she was there. Yeah, but he's not surprised.
No, there's a joke where they ask, you know, why didn't you tell us your mother's a bartender? And he says, well, when he knew her, she was a shoplifter.
Neil's joke.
Yes.
She doesn't look strong enough.
There you go.
I laughed out loud at that, and my kid said, what are you laughing at? I said, it's too stupid even to explain.
Right. And I think there's an indication that they haven't seen each other in like 10 years, something like mm-hmm. that. Oh, Viv doesn't have enough money, so it's a funny thing that his mother takes what money he has, plus his watch and ring.
Right. And she charges a huge amount for what he ordered, doesn't she?
That's what it seemed like.
Yeah.
It was like 20-some pounds or something like that in 1982.
Yeah. I think that's obviously just joking on the fact that she used to be a thief, you see. So she's still thieving. Yeah.
Right. I do like the part where Vivian introduces the others to his mom.
Well, aren't you going to introduce me to your friends?
Oh, yeah. This is a friend of mine called Mike. This is a friend of mine called Neil.
Hello.
And that's a complete bastard I know called Rick.
He's just joshing Mrs. Vivian. We're actually terrific friends.
Ooh, he is a bastard, isn't he?
That's great. And this is a complete bastard name.
Yes. Rick asks why she gave Vivian a girl's name, and which immediately falls with Vivian punching him. He falls to the floor. But then the beauty is that his mother then kicks Rick while he's on the floor.
Yes. And then she goes off with Mike, right?
Yes. She hits on Mike and they sort of, well, they don't leave together, but they sort of have their own private conversation, what have you, until Mike is rescued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that struck me watching this scene was how times had changed in the bar, because on the beer mats on the bar are all like cigarette brands.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can't see cigarette branding anywhere anymore. So, you know.
Can you smoke in bars in England now?
You can't smoke indoors anywhere.
Yeah. You really can't hear in America either.
No.
But you can't even see tobacco in the shop. It's all, you have to ask for it. Oh, it's not, it's all covered up, and they're actually changing it to complete plain white packaging.
Really?
I mean, already half the packaging is a picture of like somebody's inside of somebody's lung or something like that.
So, I've seen that before. That's amazing. Yeah, we don't have that in America yet.
But if you go to a news agency or a shop, it's behind a counter. Mm-hmm. So you have to know what you want in the first place because you can't see what's available.
Now, here in Virginia, you may know that there's a bit of a tobacco heritage.
The state was built on.
Here in the state of Virginia. It is true we have no smoking laws throughout the state indoors, except they did carve out an exception that if you had a bar where you could separate it into two rooms or have a separate room, I guess, for smoking with a separate, totally separate ventilation system, then you can still smoke in that particular smoking room. And usually it's divided by glass, you know, glass partition kind of thing. And so when you're in the normal part of the bar, the non-smoking part, the main part, it's almost like they're in a zoo or something. The people over on the other
on
side,
display.
Right? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's very strange. Okay. Where are we here now? So we get a little glimpse now of what's going on back at the flat while the boys are out at the pub. And it's kind of similar to before with these, you know, characters and such. But we also see Goldilocks enters and there are three bowls of lentils. She spits out all three of them and calls them bloody hippie food.
Exactly. Yes. I laughed at that.
They leave the pub. There's this scene with two. No, this is right. These are bobbies, right? Is that how you would refer to them? Police officers?
Okay.
They're talking to each other and they're just having this like insanely stupid conversation.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the whole joke, right?
It's just ridiculous. Yeah.
It's like dull and just inane. And
yes, it just gets dumber as it goes. And yes. And then the joke is there's like a newspaper joke that they've failed at. Police fail IQ test or something like that. I don't know. It doesn't really pay off that well.
Yeah, I don't know bizarre. If that referred to an actual story around that time. I can't. Yeah. I've got no idea. It's possible, I suppose. But
okay, now we're back at the flat, and Viv is trying to do something interesting. He's trying to show a trick where he would cut off one of his fingers, and you can see that he has six fingers. So obviously, one of them is a prosthetic or something, and nobody will watch him. And he's going to do the trick, but of course he does it wrong and he cuts off a real finger.
And the wrong finger, yes.
Rick is reading The Guardian and through various mispronunciations, he actually says that demon's name. Okay, go ahead, Stephen.
See, there's a joke there, which you may not get if you... So The Guardian is famous for its corrections and clarifications if they've misprinted a spelt something or something. And so in Private Eye, the satirical magazine that I get, the gardening is referred to as the Grawniad because just, you mix up the same letters in the same, yes, correct letters in the wrong order. So the fact that he would mispronounce something that was spelt wrong in the Guardian, hence saying the name, is a joke.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because if it was the Times or the Telegraph, it wouldn't. You wouldn't expect the mistake to the same. Yeah, whereas because it's the Guardian, oh, of course, there's a typo, so that's why he says the name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. All right.
That makes sense.
The demon appears. He mentions he has 3 minutes to collect a soul. He tries various means to kill one of the roommates. He fails. He even at one point does land a skewer through Neil's back of his head or something, but he just sort of pulls it out and ignores it.
It doesn't faze him at all.
Yes. Okay, now here we're getting something interesting here. So Neil leaves. A man comes to the front door, and then a Bobby with sunglasses mistakes him for a black man.
Now, he has, dark gloves on.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, so before we recorded this... a few days ago, Will was texting me this scene, what is the deal with this scene? Right. And I was like, oh, I haven't rewatched it yet. I don't know. And then I rewatched it yesterday. Honestly, Will, I don't remember this scene when it was on MTV.
I don't either. And I think I would have remembered it because
I do too.
It's memorable.
I do too. So, I don't want to really get into it here. The dialogue. Just
in the most sort of vaguest senses, he mistakes him for a black guy because he has brown gloves on. Otherwise, he's obviously a white guy.
Right.
And then he just starts talking vaguely threatening, using racial terms. And then at the end, he uses the big racial term that is he says, I thought you were. And then you would not see this anywhere in TV today.
No.
Clearly.
No, and it's obviously not to glorify that. It's meant to be a comment, I guess, on the police at the time,
right,
and their attitudes, right? Yes, but still, it definitely is
it's pretty jarring.
I'm not sure we can put that on TV. Yeah.
No. Although, I have seen, I will say this, I've seen episodes of American TV like Sanford and Son and All in the Family where that word was deployed as but it was, I guess, making a point, which this is too. It just sort of came out of nowhere, I was like, wow.
It definitely comes out of nowhere. Yes. Okay, well, anyway, it turns out the man is from Kellogg's. He's there to award the car to Vivian.
Yes, of course.
But then there's a very quick, the demon shoots the man, so I guess he collected his soul, soul, and then the Bobby takes the car. I don't know. It just all sort of happens, and we move
on. That's kind of the end, right?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Then Neil returns. He has this crazy idea. He suggests that tomorrow they try going into college. Maybe that would be interesting. Mike says there's no need to panic here, and then they go to bed.
That was just hilarious. That was the funniest line in the whole episode for me because I didn't go to university or college, as you guys would say. So the idea, the impression that basically most students spent most of their time lying in bed till after lunch, then getting up and watching daytime TV and then going to the pub was kind of what, that's a fairly well-established stereotype, I guess, isn't it? So the fact that he says, if things are so desperate, we might have to actually go to college. It's I thought that was pretty funny.
That's right.
That was good.
Okay, so after they all go to bed, the three bears then enter and they are upset that someone's been gobbing, that's a British term, gobbing, in the bowls of lentils, and they decide to go to McDonald's. And then, outside, we see an exterior shot, and there's a UFO descending on the house. and that's the end.
And that's the end.
Yes.
And by the way, that UFO, it looked like a real thing on a crane or something. I was like, it didn't look like a miniature. And I'm like, that took some effort too for a little joke at the end.
Yes. So that was boring. Now, we like to save the musical guest for the end here. So I mentioned when they are walking to the pub, you see the band that's playing at the pub, and it is
Madness,
right. Which Madness to me, it obviously fits right in with that time and sort of my image of music from the UK at the time. Madness was one of the first video, literally like one of the very first videos I ever saw on MTV. Like,
yeah,
to this day, I still remember like when I first got MTV, how it was House of Fun. It was that song that they were playing. Yeah. Obviously, part of the second wave of ska. And they were a big band in Britain, right?
Oh, huge. Yeah. I remember, I was at junior school. So I'm not quite sure what the equivalent would be for you then. But also I would have been about, 10, 11, 12. So wasn't at senior school or, wasn't at high school yet. But, Madness was huge. I mean, they had so many hits. So House of Fun, Baggy Trousers, Our House. Must Be Love. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just loads of hits. Although it was jarring seeing a very look like such a young Suggs, because you've seen him so much as an older man now. It's like you forget that like all of us, we were young.
Right. So okay. So there we go. That was boring. Any overall thoughts, guys?
It was so disjointed, but it was, it had some solid laughs in it. And of course the overall joke that they're bored and the most interesting things are happening and they're not paying any attention to them is
right.
Cause like at one point you mentioned the king and he says, I just wish somebody boring would fall down here, implying that would be interesting if someone were boring, and Neil almost makes it, but doesn't.
Right.
I found this one almost a little bit too disjointed. Like I said, there were some good jokes in there, but it was just so many of the cuts. Like, the puppetry stuff we expect, but when it went to the policeman, I was like, and it was just going, it went on and on that bit, and I was like, what's going on? What is happening here?
I think if there's any consistent criticism of the show, it would be that some of these little tangential bits go on too long.
Yeah, I would agree.
Actually, that one particularly did strike me as like, it was like, But anyway, it was all redeemed by Neil's joke about maybe we'll go to college with that board. Yes. That, at the end, they saved the best to the last.
Hey, guys, tomorrow, why don't we, as just a suggestion, why don't we try going into college?
Now, Neil, now listen. Things may be bad, but there's no need to panic.
Okay, all right. So, as I mentioned, we're doing this every Friday, Young Ones episode. So, tune in again next Friday, and we will talk about episode 4, Bomb.
Bomb.
I'm Jim Lenihan, and with me has been...
Stephen Rutledge.
And Will Pfeiffer.
All right. If anyone wants to comment on... The Young Ones, you can reach us at 612-440-1984 or email rock@suburbspod.com. On behalf of Patrick Foster, we will talk to you later.
I have a slight confession about my high school years to make. Is when we were high school, a bunch of us, this is before we were really old enough to go out and, you know, drink or anything like that. And we would somehow, we would play the game of life like every Friday. We would have a big game, the game of life. And we got bored with it, so we made our own version that essentially, we didn't have rules about hitting each other, but you could like steal money from other people. And like, so I can identify with Vivian.
There you go.
Even though
are you familiar with the game of life, Steven? Do you know that game?
Yeah, my sister had a, had to have
you have
that.
The little cars and you move the people around. And
there's a spinner. Yeah, I played that a few times. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a roulette wheel on that game.
Yeah. The game
of life.
The
game of life is just a big gamble.